everyone, and welcome back to Killer Cast. Okay, everyone, so today's episode, I thought I was going to be alone for, but I'm not. I have my favorite child other than my sister, Kiernan, Piper. Piper's mom's letting her be here. Yes. She's not 18, so I wanted to make sure that I did a more mild case for her because she wanted to come on the podcast. So we're going to do one that's kind of, you know, I'd say it's like 13 and up.
Yeah.
We'll do like a PG-13 case. So, yes, here's Piper. And I just found out that I have a sound pad that makes noises. So let's give her an introduction.
Please, please. Thank you. Yes, I'm so glad to be here.
Thank you for being here.
I've waited my whole life for this.
Yes, yes.
I'm very excited.
Say something funny, Piper.
I was about
What?
Yes, that's why I'm here.
All right, and last but not least, we have our little jazz moment.
Yes, get it.
Hey!
Hey! That is what's popping here tonight.
All right, so I'm excited to have Piper on here. This is going to be fun.
Yes.
So, today's case, it's not really, I mean, I guess it's true crime, but I don't really know how to put it. It's just kind of an interesting story. And that is the story of June and Jennifer Gibbons, aka the Silent Twins. So, I'm gonna go ahead and do like a deep dive on their whole lives and like kind of give like a rundown of, you know, I guess birth to now. But first, I do want to talk about how the Silent Twins got their fame and like why they're so well known, because they didn't speak to anyone but each other. So I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, like, how could their story be shared? So for that, we can thank an investigative journalist named Marjorie Wallace. So Marjorie caught wind of the case and asked the twins' parents if she could try and learn more about the girls. So they invited her into the home to look at the room that the twins once shared in there and started to visit the twins themselves while they were waiting for their trial for a crime they'd committed. The twins loved to write and desperately wanted to be famous for their writing, but they wouldn't talk to anyone. June said later that they wanted to use their writing as a way to make their family proud even though they didn't speak. Which I was like, that's kind of...
Yeah, that's super sweet. Especially not talking to your family for like years.
Yeah.
And then finally just being like, I want to make you proud.
Yeah. And but they still wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
That's like super, super weird too.
Right. So even after their sentencing, Wallace continued to visit them and tried to get them to trust and speak to her. Finally, they began to talk to her more and more. Wallace says most of the time together they spent laughing. She says the girls would respond to jokes and did have a sense of humor, but they just wouldn't. They didn't really want to talk.
Yeah.
But Wallace quickly discovered that these weren't just two sweet girls who wouldn't talk to anyone. They actually both had a severe hatred for one another. And she researched their diaries, and the girls would describe each other as enemies.
That's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
It is weird, because you see them, and they're so close, and they just...
They don't talk to anybody else and everything, but they have this secret hatred for each other.
Mm-hmm.
So they're definitely something deeper than just sisters.
Yes, absolutely. So for the entire decade before Wallace read the diaries, the girls had been documenting that they were gaining more and more fear of the other twin. Wallace also noticed that June seemed to be more fearful of Jennifer, and Jennifer had a very domineering presence over June. After the death of one of the twins later in life, the other twin was said to feel more free. Wallace spoke to the surviving twin, who told her that they both knew that the other twin would die, and that she had to so that the surviving twin could live for both of them and be stronger.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, the mom said that?
No, the surviving twin. So one of the twins died,
and
then the surviving one told Wallace, the journalist that was working with them,
that they knew that she was going to die.
Yeah, that they, like, planned her dying.
Oh,
almost.
Wow.
Like,
maybe that was, she was scared, like, the whole time because she thought it was going to be her.
I don't know.
That's
I weird. Think they knew it was going to be the one that did die,
yeah.
But I'm not sure. So after about a 30-year pact of them not speaking to anyone really except for each other, the surviving twin is now living her life for her and her sister, just like she said, and loves to talk to people. She's living a relatively normal life, and so, of course, a story like this would spark the interest of many people. Like, you see somebody for 30 years yeah. who only talks to one person, and now out of nowhere, yeah, out of nowhere is just like a normal,
yeah, normal going person,
especially after their sister dies.
Yeah, like. Exactly. You would think that would traumatize somebody into not speaking.
You would think, but I guess it's like a freedom thing. She felt like she wasn't free. But anyway, now with that out of the way, I'm gonna go ahead and start with June and Jennifer's lives from when they were born. June Allison and Jennifer Lorraine Gibbons were born April 11th, 1963 in Yemen to parents Gloria and Aubrey Gibbons. They were originally from Barbados, her parents were, but, well, their parents, not just hers.
Yeah.
Their parents were originally from Barbados, and soon they moved to Wales, like in the early 60s-ish.
60s, the best time.
Yes. And it's also worth noting that they spoke English in their home. This is worth noting because whenever the kids neared speaking age, they started to display abnormal behavior that their parents had noticed. They weren't talking like other kids that age, and they had become extremely and almost concerningly attached to one another. They wouldn't... What?
That's so weird. I don't know. I feel like twins in general, like, not everyone, but if you meet a set of twins, they're automatically, like, they're different, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're connected to each other. Like, some feel like they can feel the same pain. They can feel, like, what each other is talking about.
Right.
And I just feel like that's so weird.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I'm sure their parents thought it was normal because, like you said, like, a lot of other twins have this behavior. But they started getting more concerned because it seemed that they were speaking their own language.
Yeah, okay.
And again, this is an English-speaking house. Yeah. So, of course, it had to be, like, something that they made up or whatever.
Yeah, which could just be kids, you know, doing their thing.
They didn't really know at first, but we do end up finding out that the language is just a sped-up version of English, but both the twins shared the same speech impediment.
Oh, okay.
So it, like, sounded different.
Gotcha.
And that's why nobody could understand them.
Yeah.
But they knew that nobody could understand them,
which
and they continued to do it.
Which is probably why they did it. Yeah, yes. Exactly. They found out
they didn't want to make those leaps and bounds because they were like, well, we can just talk in secret. You
so
know what
why
I mean?
Would we do anything else?
Right. So their dad said that he could hear them make sounds and communicate, but that they weren't ready and able to have a conversation with people in the real world yet. It's also said that Jennifer and June would seclude themselves due to bullying at school. The twins were the only black students in their school and often were bullied and shamed for it, unfortunately. So much so that their teacher started dismissing them 5 minutes early so they wouldn't be harassed by the other students, which
wow.
is pretty sad.
That's so sad.
Yeah, it is sad. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if that contributed to them being, like, more closed
yeah,
off.
Yeah, exactly.
Because,
and being
like,
close to each other because they felt like they needed to protect each other.
Yeah, yeah. So when the girls were younger, sometimes their parents could pick up on words in their secret language during conversation, maybe could figure out some things they were saying, but by the time the girls hit their teenage years, this language was completely and totally unable to be deciphered by anyone.
Which I feel like is also very weird because teenagers being themselves very chatty, like, you know, like I'm always yeah. talking with my friends, always making mm-hmm. jokes and everything, but having this secret language with literally your best friend slash sister.
Yeah. And on top of that, they started refusing to do what they were told if it involved communicating with literally anyone else. They often would refuse to speak to teachers. They didn't want to talk to anyone outside their home. And would sometimes even refuse to do their reading and writing in school. Now, I think they did talk to their siblings. I think they had a sister they talked to until she was about 11.
Oh, okay.
And they had, they did talk to their mom and dad. It just, like, mm-hmm. wasn't frequently.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't.
It was minimized.
It was very minimal, yeah. It's said that when they would walk down the street together, they would even have a synchronized walking pattern and would always take steps in unison. And June told people,
yeah.
what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I know, like, a lot of stories where twins like get obsessed with being like each other, like having the same steps, same clothes, same hairdo.
Yeah, it's definitely not the first time you've heard of something. This one's just like really severe. But yeah, they would take their steps in unison. June told people that sometimes they would wake up as one another. Like, they would wake up, like, in another person's body, like, in each other's bodies. And they would, like, negotiate with each other and be like, oh, if you give me back myself, I'll give you back yourself.
That's so weird to think about, that they could be, like, in each other's heads. Because even if it wasn't true or not, but if it was, imagine being in your sister's body and having to beg for your body back.
Yeah, that's what I said. And the thing is, like, we read earlier that they were... they kind of like were developing a hatred for each other.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, you can imagine, like, can you imagine fighting with your sister? Yeah, like, give me my soul back.
Like, please.
Yeah.
Like, you stole my t-shirt and my body? Seriously?
Yeah. Like, that would be
horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely would begin to grow a relationship of hatred.
Yeah. Also, I gotta give you one of these. You were like, you said my t-shirt and my body?
Yeah. Wait. Yes, thank you.
Give you jazz for that one. That was beautiful. Anyway, so outsiders started to notice the girl's strange behavior early on, but it had come to a concerning level one day when they were at school getting ready to get their tuberculosis vaccination in 1974. The medic administering the vaccines noticed that they had virtually no reaction to the shots at all, and he said that they were doll-like with their mannerisms and really showed no emotion. Like,
that's
no reaction to the
weird.
Needle, nothing.
Yeah. So I definitely feel there was something up with these girls. Like, maybe something was, like, attached to them, like, spiritually or...
Yeah.
Because I
feel... I have no idea.
Especially the way that she said that she felt like she was trapped and then she was free.
Mm-hmm.
And even more with the thing where she said, I was stuck in her body.
Yeah.
Like, that's definitely weird to think about.
It's very weird. Yeah. Very weird indeed. So, yeah, he said that they were doll-like, didn't show any emotion... So he told the headmaster of the school, who said that the girls were not especially troubled.
Yeah.
But the medic ended up being like, yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah,
they
definitely.
Are especially troubled. And he went to a child psychologist and began to speak about the girls. And then from there, it was determined that they did need to be enrolled into therapy immediately. Dozens of psychologists and psychiatrists tried to help, but the girls would still not talk. And... February of 1977, a speech therapist named Anne Treharn, I believe it's pronounced, tried to get the girls to talk, but they wouldn't. They did, however, agree to have their conversation recorded while they were alone, and I believe that's how they found out that their language was a sped-up version of English.
Yeah, because it was on record.
Yeah, so they were able to, like,
decipher
listen
it.
To it. Yeah. This therapist noted that the girls had significantly different body language. She got the feeling that June was more open and wanted to talk to her, but that Jennifer was somehow holding her back. Jennifer was more reserved, and she would always give June, like, weird, dirty looks whenever people would try to get her to talk.
I feel like that's, like, a form of threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, Jennifer was definitely doing stuff to get in her head.
Yeah, like, you know the look. Like, if you do something, like, fucked up and your mom
exactly.
looks at you and just gives you that look and you know
it's
in your head, you're like, oh, shit,
just,
I
like, put
up.
The cookie back.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, exactly. And I feel like that's, like, kind of the look that Jennifer was giving June. So, and it came to the point that the speech therapist, Anne Treharn, thought that June might have been possessed by Jennifer.
See, that's what I was talking about, something spiritually. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer definitely could have been in her, like, head and her body.
Could have been. I have no idea. There's, like, nothing really ever came of that, but it was a theory at one point. And it was determined that the twins' relationship was clearly unhealthy.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
So, the therapist saw that they were separated and sent to different boarding schools, and that was supposed to, like, try and get them to function as two separate people instead of one single person and kind of develop their own identities. But, however, this did not work out at all. They became even more recluse, and it got to a point where they weren't moving or functioning at all. They were, like, catatonic. Like,
that's super weird.
They wouldn't eat. There was speculation that they weren't sleeping because people would come in the morning to, like, check on them, and they would just be sitting on the edge of the bed in their clothes from yesterday, just not moving.
Yeah.
And they were described by a couple people as like living corpses.
Yeah, so they couldn't function without each other.
Yeah, it was definitely like they just gave up. And at one point, June even had to be lifted out of her bed by two people who said that they had to lean her against the wall because she was stiff like a board.
This is, which one was that?
June.
That's what makes me think that Jennifer definitely had some darkness to her.
Yeah, I know. But they also say later on that both June and Jennifer acknowledged that June was the stronger twin because she was older.
Yeah.
By like 10 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And so they like both acknowledged that, but at the same time, it seems like Jennifer had like the stronger presence.
Yeah, definitely stronger presence, or she got so much into her head where June was just scared to a point where she just gave up.
Yeah, could have been. So they were separated for a while, and then whenever they were brought back together again, they quit talking to everyone altogether. They wouldn't even speak to their parents at this point. They would only write them letters. And for their 16th birthday, the twins got diaries. They started to write down thoughts and feelings along with stories and plays. They took a mail order writing course and decided to try and get some of their work published, but the only novel that they ever wrote to make it to publication was called The Pepsi Cola Addict. And it was a story based on a teenager whose high school teacher kind of comes on to him and tries to seduce him. Most of their stories did involve extremely violent and awful crimes and were mainly set in the United States, and primarily of the ones set in the United States, it was mostly based in Malibu.
Okay.
So, you know, they had like all these like really violent stories, and then soon after the book was published, the girls themselves became a bit more violent. They met these two brothers from America, and they started getting into like sex, drugs, alcohol. They started committing crimes such as theft, arson, just like down a bad road. And many people thought that these boys were bad influences for them and bringing a lot of destruction to the Gibson sisters' lives. As they got closer to the boys, they began to be more violent with each other due to competition for the boys' affection. They even tried to kill each other.
Over some boys.
Wow. I don't know if it was all over the boys, but like they did try to kill each other. They wrote about it in their diaries. So like Jennifer tried to strangle June with a wire to a radio.
Oh my God.
And it ended up not working. And June tried to drown Jennifer.
Yeah, I feel like June just got to the point where she was like, this girl needs to be
June
dead.
June was actually quoted as saying about that if I just kill her now, maybe I'll have a good life.
Yeah, so she was definitely tied down.
Yeah.
Or they made some pact where they wouldn't like cut off the whole world except each other.
Yeah, they did have a pact like that. They said it was like an unspoken pact that they wouldn't talk. Like, they would just
That's definitely super weird.
Yeah. So after that, the boys ended up eventually going back to America in July of 1981. And after that, the twins stayed to themselves for about 2 months. And then in September of 1981, June and Jennifer ended up being arrested for arson. They burnt down a tractor store that June had been writing in her diary about wanting to burn down for a while. She wrote that it was the best moment of her life whenever she saw all the flames going up.
Yeah.
And after that, they were sent to a place called the Puckle Church Remand Center in Bristol for 7 months while they waited for their trial. And that's where they met that journalist.
Oh, okay.
So at first they were allowed to share a cell, and then they were separated. And then they ended up being together again, but they got into a fight and were separated again. And it seems like it was kind of this vicious cycle, like they couldn't be with each other, they couldn't be without each other.
Yeah, exactly.
If they were with each other, they were being violent, like trying to kill each other. Mm. If they were away from each other, they were like zombies.
So it's just that gas and fire relationship, not good either way.
Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't talk to anyone, but they did agree to like some type of speech over the phone with the doctor. They would tell the doctor how they were feeling, and according to June's diary, Jennifer would talk about how she heard voices and wanted to kill June. And June talked about being an empath and feeling others' emotions while having vivid dreams, and she also said she'd like to kill Jennifer.
That's why I feel like Jennifer was in her head.
Yeah.
It's because
there's a lot that leads to that.
Yeah, because June's saying how she feels all these feelings and having vivid dreams.
Yeah.
And imagine hearing your sister, oh, let's kill June.
Yeah.
Let's kill her. Let's set this on fire.
Yeah.
Let's, like, take a wire, mm-hmm. wrap it around her neck. Like, that's definitely disturbing.
Yeah. And, like, even if she's not, like, actually, like, in her head, like, possessing her.
Yeah.
I feel like it's still, like, with how close and how their relationship was and just like talking to only each other for so long.
Yeah.
I feel like at that point, like Jennifer could have been in her head, like even like physically talking to her and just putting ideas in her head.
Definitely.
Because, you know, she's so close to Jennifer. Of course she's going to listen.
Yeah, exactly. So, being so close with somebody and thinking that they want the best for you.
But that's like, that's all speculation. It's not really like, that's not facts or anything. It's just,
but it's definitely a cool theory.
Yeah.
To think
it's
about.
Something to think about. So the girls pled guilty to their crimes because there was a doctor they were speaking to who basically told them, like, from what June says, she was, like, talking about getting help and stuff. And the doctor was like, oh, well, you can go to this place called Broadmoor. It'll be only for a couple years. And so June was like 3 years? And he was like, yeah, like 3 years. And she said, okay, no more than 3 years. So they ended up pleading guilty so that they could do that.
Yeah.
And they actually were sentenced to Broadmoor Hospital indefinitely, which is like a maximum security mental hospital.
Yeah, so they're always watched.
Yeah, and they were, like I said, they were sentenced indefinitely until they've been helped. So there was no 3 years about it.
Yeah.
They were just sentenced there and they had to stay until they were rehabilitated, I guess. The girl's father, Aubrey, said the most heartbreaking thing I've ever heard in my life. And he said that the hardest part about the girls being in Broadmoor was whenever he'd have to leave them after visiting and that, hug them and kiss them and say goodbye and know that they can't go with
literally,
him.
Literally, I can tell you that is the worst feeling, being in the hospital, going for visiting hours, seeing like all your like family, friends, and then having to leave. Like they give you like this little bell and you're just like, oh my God, I have to go back.
Yeah.
Literally, that is like the worst feeling.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it was hard on the girls too.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
So for 2 years after being at Broadmoor, the twins were still separated and not speaking. They were allowed to write letters and eventually they were allowed to visit each other, but they were in like different wards of the hospital specifically because they wanted them to stay separate for the most part, like at a healthy amount.
Mm-hmm.
So in like after that first 2 years of being there, they were both diagnosed with schizophrenia and put on meds. One of the meds that they were put on were tranquilizers. And whenever they were put on the tranquilizers, that it would make them forget about who they were. It would make them forget about that unspoken pact that they weren't supposed to talk to people. Like, it would, June described it as making her head super hazy.
Yeah.
And so they would start talking because they like
they forgot
almost
everything.
Forgot that they weren't supposed to.
Yeah.
You know? So they started talking like normal. They'd get these tranquilizers all the time. They'd just talk to people. And that was the only way they'd talk. So at this point, the twins were communicating with others, but it seemed like every time they tried to be released from Broadmoor, the court would say that they still need more work. They ended up being at Broadmoor for 12 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Jennifer's so pissed.
Yeah. I know she
said is. 3 years max.
Yeah, both of
years.
Them. Yeah. And in a letter to June, Jennifer had told her that she will die early and much earlier than June at that, but that it doesn't really matter and she just hopes she'll be happy still. So Jennifer sent that to June. She was like, hey, I'm gonna die much earlier than you.
Yeah.
Like, basically told her, like, I'm gonna die soon.
Very soon.
Yeah.
That'd be so terrifying, knowing your death,
yeah.
knowing you're going to die before your sister.
It's like she died at will.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
see, that's why I'm saying, like, the whole theory of her, like, being something more.
Yeah.
Because she knew her time of
it's
death.
It's like she
and
was just able to, like,
be here
just
for
die.
A certain. Yeah.
Just
exactly.
die. Like, on command.
Yeah. And just, like, get away from all
yeah.
of this.
And so, a month before their 30th birthday in March of 1993, the girls got a letter that they were going to be moved from Broadmoor to a medium security prison in Wales, I believe. But the day before they were supposed to make the transfer, Jennifer started to feel sick, saying that she was weak and she was tired. And then from one of the sources I read, well, from a couple sources, some of them I read that they were like still at the hospital at Broadmoor, but most of the things I read said that they were in the car, like on the bus, like being transferred.
Yeah.
And Jennifer laid her head down on June's shoulder. And according to June, Jennifer looked up at her and said, at long last, we're out. ew. And then died.
Ew. Yeah. I don't like that. At last, we are out.
Yeah.
So I feel like they, if Jennifer didn't like make a pact with something else, they made a pact together for something.
Yeah. And it's like, she's saying like, we're out. Like they were both trapped
in this relationship.
You know what I mean?
Which is terrifying.
And her supposed cause of death was due to swelling around the heart. So it was like a swelling of like her cardiac muscles or something.
That's weird.
And but the thing is, it's very rare and it's usually not fatal. So people wonder like what actually killed her. Like, and a lot of people say that she just decided. Like she was just like, all right, it's time for me to die.
And then she like, just did.
And just died at the age of 29.
And I feel like when they were on the bus, she knew she was going to be in that hospital for a really long time. They've already been there for 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting sent somewhere else. And she was with June. They were connected. She could lay her head on her shoulder, have that contact. And she was like, you know what? I'm ready.
Yeah.
And then just let go.
Yeah.
And then she was finally out of it, and then June felt free.
Yeah.
So that's very weird.
Yeah. And so whenever she died, the family went to see Jennifer's body, and June wrote this in her diary. Today, my beloved twin sister Jennifer died. She is dead. Her heart stopped beating. She will never recognize me. Mom and Dad came to see her body. I kissed her stone-colored face, and I went hysterical with grief.
Wow.
Yeah. Their diaries, I'll point out, are, like, very well written. But, I mean, they were wanted to be authors, so, like, that makes sense. But, like,
for not speaking and everything, having such a good way with words and everything is very cool.
Yeah. So, then it leads us to 1 year after Jennifer's death. So, June was described to have gone through a great deal of grief, but also made like leaps and bounds in her progress. Like,
because she was free.
Yeah, she was like, she was doing really well. And she described it as a sense of freedom. And I'm assuming that that's like a freedom from the toxic relationship she had with her sister. And it seemed like death was the only option that would free one of them from the relationship. June was finally released on parole a year after Jennifer's death.
Yeah.
And June says that she now takes on the responsibility of living for herself and for Jennifer. She says she wakes up every day and does it for the both of them and says that it's a big responsibility, but that it makes her stronger.
Which also makes you think, why is it such a big responsibility? Like, what are you living for your sister? Yeah. Like, what did you guys do?
Yeah.
Like, that made it feel like it was such a big burden to take a hold. Like, at least, like, one of you had to do it, and June had to take that responsibility for living for both of them. Because I know when people do pass away, they're like, oh, you know what, I'm living for them each day, which is a great sense of motivation to get out of that dark time and grief. But thinking about everything that they went through and everything they talked about, like, what kind of responsibility was that exactly?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And you know what? Now, like I said, June is apparently thriving. I tried to look up and see if she was still alive.
Yeah.
I think she is. That's because cool. I couldn't find anything about her dying.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I mean, she was only born in the 60s?
Yeah.
1963. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure she's not.
Yeah, she's probably still kicking.
Fine.
Yeah.
She's probably fine. But I read in an article, like, there was like a quote from an article that said, she'll talk to anyone who will listen.
Ew.
Yeah.
That's weird.
But I think that's kind of cool for her, though. Like, yeah, she stayed silent for 30 years of her life. Like, can you imagine?
Imagine the stories she has to tell.
And it seems like even those 12 years that she was, like, locked up.
Yeah.
It seemed like, I watched this documentary, and it was called Without My Shadow, I believe it was called. And it like showed footage of June and like she was like talking and stuff, and it just seemed like being locked up didn't even bother her because she felt trapped anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's weird to think about. Like, you're already in a cell in your head. Yeah. Like, this doesn't matter.
Like, all they would have done is sit in their room anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So they were trapped at the beginning.
Yeah. So that is all I have.
That was really good.
But I thought it was just such a cool case, and I couldn't help but like want to do it, and I feel like it was a good one to have you on, because obviously, like,
Yeah, this definitely interests me a lot. Like, yeah. There's so many theories, and it took me, like, so many ways, and I'm definitely interested.
Yes, we will have you on all the PG-13 episodes.
Oh, thank you.
So, so that is the story of Jennifer and June Gibbons. I hope you guys enjoyed it. It's definitely
an interesting one. Yeah.
And make sure to tune in every Monday for new episodes and follow on Instagram and TikTok at KillerCast Podcast and Twitter at KillerCast Pod. And let's give Piper a round of applause for being here. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You've done great.
I feel so famous.
Yes. You're so famous.
I have so
many listeners. I'm a big famous podcaster.
Hello, guys.
Yes. All right. All right. Enough. Let her live.
Oh, my God. An encore.
All right. Bye.